Lisa wondered out loud.
Yes, I told her that I've met someone that I'm enjoying spending time with. When she emailed saying she was coming, I told her it was you and that I thought she should stay somewhere else.
Oh, so she'll go elsewhere. That was a relief.
No, she refused. She said there are no other acceptable places. But I think once I told her that the woman I was interested in was you, it made her even more curious and determined to stay. She always did like a challenge.
Oh, well, I guess we're stuck with her then, aren't we? Lisa joked about it, but the lovely mood of the night was tarnished. When they arrived home, Rhett stopped at her door, and the butterflies came back briefly as Lisa wondered if he might be considering a goodnight kiss. He did look as though the thought had crossed his mind, but after pulling her in for a hug, he simply took a step back.
I had a wonderful time tonight. I hope to do it again soon, and again, I'm very sorry about having to share that news, but I thought you should know.
I'm glad you did. And it was a lovely night. I'd be happy to go out again, too.
Good night, Lisa.
Rhett smiled and gave her a mischievous wink as he turned to go upstairs. When she let herself inside, she pulled up her laptop, and sure enough, there was a new email reservation from Gina. She had paid fully in advance and was arriving in 2 weeks on a Sunday and staying for just over a week through Daffodil Weekend. Lisa had a sinking feeling that this woman was going to be trouble. Chapter 14. As the weeks went by, Abby missed Jeff more and more. She alternated between being strong and fine that he was gone and feeling independent to missing him like crazy. Missing him like crazy was starting to win, especially as the hormones began to kick in. And especially after the date night that they had had the night before. Jeff had shown up to pick her up at 5:30 sharp. It was the earliest that she could ever remember him being home and ready to go to dinner. He'd said that he went in early so he could leave earlier. He'd showered and showed up at her door with a bouquet of flowers. They went to their favorite Italian restaurant, and she'd had what she always had when she went there, the eggplant parmesan. Jeff had the chicken parm and a glass of wine while she had a Shirley Temple. It was awkward at first, but after about 10 minutes or so, it almost felt like normal. Jeff told her all the crazy stuff that was going on at work, and she almost told him that she was pregnant. It was a good start, and it gave her a glimpse of how things could be if Jeff took it seriously and if he really was able to change his schedule. He said that he was, and he seemed sincere, which gave her hope. Abby had just finished eating a bowl of tomato soup and a grilled cheese sandwich and was about to slip into her pajamas and curl up and watch the latest episode of The Bachelor when there was a knock at the door. It was early, only 6:30, and she wasn't expecting anyone to come by. When she opened the door, she saw that it was Jeff and looked at him in confusion.
"Did you try to call me? I don't think I heard the cell phone ring."
Jeff looked good. He was holding a paper grocery bag and leaning against the side of the door.
"I wasn't planning on coming by. I just ran out to the store to get milk, and I got a gallon of our favorite ice cream. I was heading home and had to drive right by here and just thought maybe you might want to have a bowl with me."
He smiled at her with that grin that used to melt her heart. She felt her stomach do a little flip, and she really loved that ice cream. Funny enough, she'd been craving it more than usual lately. "Well, since you have it with you, how can I say no to that? Come on in." Jeff went straight to the kitchen, got 2 bowls out of the cupboard, and filled them with several generous scoops of ice cream, and then added spoons. They went into the living room and settled in their usual spots on the comfy sofa, and ate their ice cream mostly in silence.
"I had fun last night," Jeff finally said.
He looked as though he wanted to say something else, but instead took another bite of ice cream. It was a great night. I miss doing that. We used to go out like that all the time.
I know. It's been a long time since we did that. We should do it more often.
They fell quiet again as they finished their ice cream. Abby was lost in her memories of how they used to do this often. When they were first married, before Jeff spent all his time at work. When they finished, Abby jumped up and took the empty bowls into the kitchen and rinsed them out in the sink before putting them in the dishwasher. When she returned to the living room, Jeff was still sitting on the sofa, holding the remote and flipping through channels. I'm gonna make a cup of tea. Would you like one? Jeff never drank tea, but much to her surprise, he said that he'd love a cup. She went back to the kitchen, made the tea, and then brought it back into the living room.
Anything you feel like watching?
He asked as she handed him a steaming cup of tea. She smiled mischievously. Well, I was about to watch The Bachelor. I taped it last night while we were out. She knew that he hated that show.
The Bachelor? Sure, that's fine.
He clicked over to the DVR, found the taped episode, and clicked play. And for the next hour, they watched 25 women competing for the bachelor's heart and a chance to get married. Abby had always loved the show and the fantasy of finding your perfect soulmate in just a few dates, and then getting married and having everything work out perfectly. Jeff thought it was ridiculous. Abby didn't disagree with that, but she still enjoyed it. When the show ended, Jeff smiled and shook his head.
I can't believe you still love that show so much.
What can I say? I'm addicted. I'm always hopeful that they'll find true love. I'm not sure it really exists, though. Jeff frowned.
That's cynical for you.
He took her hand and looked intently in her eyes.
I thought what we had was true love. I still do.
Abby felt tears build and threaten to spill over. I thought that we did too. Do you think that we can get back there again?
I do. I really think so. Let's put this behind us. Let me move back in and I'll prove it to you.
Abby hesitated. But she really did want Jeff to move back in. She missed him, and she was hopeful that they could make things work. She knew that the only way that she would know for sure would be to let him try, to see if he could keep to the new schedule. If he could, then she would tell him about the baby. If he couldn't, well, she'd cross that bridge if she had to. She just didn't want him to change because of the baby. Because then she wouldn't trust that it was real. Okay, you can move back in. But things really need to be different, and not just for a week or two. It needs to be a permanent change. Can you commit to that? Jeff took her hand again and squeezed it.
Of course. I'll go get my things and be back within the hour.
When he left, Abby went back to the sofa and pulled her softest fleece throw around her. She felt a mix of emotions, nervousness that she'd made the right decision, and happiness that Jeff was coming home. Kate was enjoying living at Paige's house even more than she'd expected to. She felt very at home there and had settled in quickly. Each morning, her routine was the same. She woke up, made coffee, and went straight into the office, where she turned on her favorite Nora Jones station on Pandora and opened her manuscript. She read over what she'd written the day before, making little tweaks here and there. It helped her to get her head back into the story, and then she'd dive in and write for several hours before taking a break. She usually went for a walk around the neighborhood at some point for a half hour or so, to get some exercise in and stretch her muscles. She also found that the walking and listening to music helped her mind to relax and shake loose at least one or two new ideas, so that when she returned to the house, she was ready to write her next scene. She was almost halfway through her story and was excited to send it off to Philippe when she finished. It felt like it was coming along pretty well, at least she hoped that it was. She planned to have Kristen read it before she sent it to Philippe to make sure it wasn't awful. She knew that Kristen would tell her the truth. She knew it probably wasn't that bad, but she was always nervous that whatever she wrote might not be as good as it seemed while she was writing it. When Sunday afternoon rolled around, she wrote until 2, then went for her walk before heading to her mother's house for Sunday dinner. Everyone was meeting there around 4 to catch up on the week and enjoy their mother's famous pot roast. Kate was looking forward to it. She went along her usual route and was almost back at her house when Jack Tertell ran by. He waved, then stopped in his driveway and started to stretch. "Did you have a good run?" she asked as she slowed to a stop.
"Not too bad. It's finally starting to warm up a bit, and the sun was shining. How was your walk?"
"Good. I think I worked out who the murderer might be." Jack looked confused for a moment, then laughed as he realized what she was talking about.
"Sounds like the book is going well."
"It is coming along. I just passed the halfway point today. Living here seems to help. It's so quiet and peaceful." Half of the houses on the street were only occupied in the summer, and the residents were older, so it was a quiet area. Jack stopped stretching and stood tall.
"Oh, I need to thank you. I appreciate that you put a good word in with Rhett Byrne. If his restaurant does well, that could be a nice account for us."
Kate smiled. "We just told him where we buy our seafood. And then he had a taste of your lobster. My mother put it in her quiche. That sealed the deal." He laughed.
"Well, that's something I haven't tried. It sounds great."
"My mother gave me the recipe. I should make it one of these days."
"Tell you what, I'll give you the lobster if you promise to make it and share."
"That's an offer I can't refuse."
"Great. I'll stop by one day this week on my way home from work with a bag of shucked lobster for you. Enjoy the rest of your day."
Kate watched him walk toward his house as she continued on. She couldn't help noticing that he was in really good shape, with muscular legs, lean stomach. She'd never really looked at Jack that way. He'd never been on her radar as she'd moved off island as soon as she graduated from college, and she hadn't kept up with people that had decided to stay on Nantucket. All of her close friends had moved off island too. She reminded herself that she didn't know how long she'd be able to stay there either, so it was probably best not to get too close to anyone anytime soon.
"You and Jeff are back together? That's marvelous."
Lisa was thrilled for her youngest daughter. Abby was finally smiling again as she told them the good news. Kristen, Kate, and Abby were all sitting around the kitchen island. Chase had plans with friends, so wouldn't be joining them for Sunday dinner. The pot roast was simmering away on the stove. It was ready to eat any time, but Lisa was in no rush. She'd put out some cheese and crackers and a bowl of peel-and-eat shrimp, and Kate had poured wine for everyone except Abby, who made herself a Shirley Temple. Kristen nibbled on a shrimp while Kate sipped her Chardonnay. Abby spread Lisa's homemade cheddar spread onto a cracker as she continued to tell them about Jeff. "So that was exactly a week ago. I wanted to see how things went before I told you all." "That means things are going well?" Kate asked. Lisa turned the heat down on the pot roast and joined the others around the island. She reached for a piece of cheese as she waited for Abby to reply. "So far, so good. I'm optimistic. He's been home early every day. We went out to dinner last night, and we haven't run out of ice cream since he's been back."
"That's important,"
Kristen laughed.
"Will you tell him about the baby soon?"
Lisa asked. It bothered her that Abby was keeping such a big secret. Abby hesitated.
"I will, when the time is right."
"Don't wait too long. It would be awful if he heard about it from someone else," Kate warned. But Abby shrugged it off. I've only told you all, so I don't see how that's possible.
I will tell him soon, though. She stuffed another piece of cheese in her mouth and changed the subject.
How are things going with you and Rhett? Has his ex-wife checked in yet?
Lisa had told the girls about her upcoming guest, and they were all equally appalled and curious about her.
Not yet. She's due any time, though. She missed the early boat and texted that she'd be checking in late afternoon. She paused for a sip of wine.
Things with Rhett seem to be going fine. We're enjoying each other's company.
She couldn't help smiling as she said it, because they'd seen quite a bit of each other since their first night out. Rhett had taken her out a few more times, and she'd had him over for dinner several times as well, and they shared breakfast together most mornings. She wasn't sure where it was going, but she was happy with taking things slow and getting to know him.
That might be her now, Kate said.
Lisa followed her gaze out the window and saw a taxi at the end of the driveway. A few minutes later, there were two loud knocks at the door. Lisa took a deep breath and went to let her in. She wasn't sure how she'd pictured Gina, as Rhett had never described her, but she was still surprised by the woman standing before her. The overall look of most people on Nantucket was laid back, conservative, even preppy. Gina was none of those things. She had big hair. It fell to her shoulders with all kinds of wild curls and layers going on. It was dark brown, and there wasn't a single gray hair in evidence anywhere. Either she was lucky or used a very good colorist. Her eyes were heavily made up with smoky eyeliner, shadow, and possibly fake lashes, and she was dripping in diamonds. She had huge diamond studs in both ears and an even larger one around her neck, just above her impressive cleavage. She was wearing a red cashmere sweater that was snug around her ample bust. Skinny dark jeans and black patent leather high heels completed her outfit. Gina wasn't overweight, but she wasn't thin either, which Lisa was relieved to see. Not that it really mattered, though. Rhett had said he wasn't interested in getting back with his ex, and Lisa believed him.
You must be Lisa,
Gina said with a smile. She glanced around the room and to the girls watching closely in the kitchen.
I am, and these are my daughters, Kate, Kristen, and Abby. Let me get your key and show you to your room.
Lisa quickly grabbed the key and led the way upstairs to the room that was the furthest from Rhett's. She unlocked the door and gave Gina her usual welcome speech, explaining when breakfast was and where to find extra towels if she needed them. Gina looked around the room and nodded.
This is nicer than I expected.
Thanks.
Lisa felt both complimented and slightly insulted at the same time.
I think you know my ex, Rhett Byrne, Gina said. Of course, he's staying here as well.
Lisa said. She was surprised that Gina brought it up.
Right. We're still on very good terms. We're going out for a nice dinner tonight to catch up. Any suggestions on where to go? I figured you'd know.
Gina smiled sweetly while Lisa was taken aback, but she didn't want to show it.
There are so many good options. I'd suggest the club car. It's always good.
Fantastic. See you at breakfast, or maybe I won't if we're out too late. You know how it is.
She chuckled as Lisa backed out of the room, eager to get away from the woman.
Well, have a good night and let me know if you need anything. I'll be sure to do that.
Lisa had a lovely visit with the girls. They stayed for several hours, lingering over coffee and dessert. Even Kristen, who usually passed on anything sweet, had tried a big scoop of the decadent trifle. It was simple to make, just layers of brownies drizzled with Kahlua and chocolate sauce and layered with homemade whipped cream, crushed toffee bits, and sliced sweet strawberries. Later that evening, when the girls were gone and she was in her comfiest pajamas, Lisa had a second small bowl. She glanced at the clock now and then.
wondering how late Rhett and Gina would stay out. She and the girls had heard them leave earlier. Gina's loud laughter as they walked out the door had Kate raising her eyebrows as if to say, "Oh, please." She heard them come home a little before 10, which meant that Gina didn't get her way about staying out late. She smiled with satisfaction as she took her last bite of the trifle. She was surprised the next morning when Gina didn't join them for breakfast. Rhett was on his second cup of coffee and helping himself to a wedge of the asparagus and tomato frittata that Lisa had made when she finally mentioned the other woman. "Do you think Gina will make it down for breakfast?" They were the only two guests until Friday when she was booked solid all weekend. Rhett laughed.
"Gina doesn't really get up much before 10.
"Oh, she gave me the impression that she'd be down for breakfast." He shook his head.
"I'd be shocked if she makes it down once while she's here."
"Did you have a nice dinner last night?" Lisa asked. Rhett met her gaze and sighed.
"I didn't have much choice about that. She insisted and said it would be rude not to take her out at least once while she was here. So I did."
Lisa smiled. "She warned me that it might be a late night."
"Did she?"
He shook his head.
"She tried, I'll give her that. She talked me into one after dinner drink, but I said no to Brazilian night dancing."
Lisa almost spit out her coffee as she laughed. Many of the island workers were from Brazil or Jamaica, and one of the local pubs played Brazilian music on Sunday nights.
"That would be something to see," she said.
He laughed.
"That it would."
He reached out and took Lisa's hand.
"I wished that you were with me last night. Let's do something tonight."
"Why don't you come to dinner? I have leftover pot roast and a dessert I think you might like. The girls loved it." She'd discovered that Rhett had quite a sweet tooth.
"How can I say no to that?"
Chapter 15. Kate worked late on Tuesday. The writing was going so well that she lost track of time completely and the hours slipped away. She vaguely noticed that the sun wasn't shining as brightly as it had been earlier in the day. But then she figured out what poison the killer used. It needed to be something that would go undetected, yet slowly make the victim sicker over time. A bit of antifreeze slipped into orange juice did the trick. She was so deep into the scene that she almost didn't hear the knocking on the door until it got louder. Reluctant to tear herself away from her story world, she slowly got up, went into the kitchen, and smiled when she saw who it was. She opened the door, and Jack walked in holding a big paper bag from Tretel's Seafood. He handed it to her.
"Your lobster. 1.5 pounds. I shucked it myself."
Kate had completely forgotten about the lobster. She hadn't thought he was serious.
"Wow, thank you. You didn't have to do that."
He grinned.
"I have an ulterior motive. That quiche sounded good."
She thought for a moment, taking a mental inventory of what she had on hand. Everything but cream. She'd have to run to the store for that.
"What time do you go to work in the morning? Or if you want to come by after work, we could have it for dinner?"
"Dinner sounds good to me. I don't want to have to rush off to work."
That sounded better to Kate, too. She could run out in the morning and bake it in the afternoon, so it would be just made when he came by.
"What time is good for you?" she asked.
"I'm usually home by 6, and we'll need to jump in the shower so I don't stink of fish."
Kate laughed. He didn't smell like fish at all, though after working around it all day, she didn't blame him for wanting a shower.
"Why don't you just come by whenever you're ready, then?
Any time is fine."
"All right, I'm off to hit the shower now. See you tomorrow."
"Thanks again for the lobster."
Kate watched him go and then went to find her mother's recipe. She'd emailed it to her after Kate had raved about the quiche. Kate stopped working the next afternoon around 4 and set about making the lobster quiche.
First, she made the pie crust and then the custard filling. It really was a simple recipe. She just sautéed a little onion and butter, then added a splash of sherry and the chopped lobster. She let it cool, then dumped it all into the pie shell and poured in the mixture of eggs and heavy cream. A sprinkling of grated Swiss cheese over the top, and it was ready to go into the oven. About 45 minutes later, her nose told her the quiche was done. When she checked, it was perfectly golden brown, and she set it on the counter to cool. When they were ready to eat, she would pop it back into the oven to warm up. She showered and made a simple tossed salad to go with the quiche. She still had about an hour before Jack was due to arrive, so she opened her manuscript up again and dove back into the story. It was going much faster now, as she knew where the story was going, and it was almost like a race to get it all down. The hour flew by, and before she knew it, there was a knock on the door. She put her laptop away and went to let him in. When she opened the door, she got a whiff of something nice. Jack had splashed on some aftershave, and it smelled great. He wore a hunter green button-down shirt and jeans, and his hair was still a little damp. He handed her a bottle of chilled Chardonnay. "You didn't have to bring anything. The lobster was more than enough."
"My mother always said it was rude to show up empty-handed. I'm happy to open it if you feel like a glass."
"Sure, that'd be great." She handed him a wine opener and two glasses. While he was pouring the wine, she put the quiche in the oven to warm up. Then she opened a can of roasted salted nuts and poured them into a dish. Jack handed her a glass of wine, and they sat at the island. "The quiche won't take long to heat up," she said as she reached for a cashew.
"I'm in no hurry. How'd the writing go today?"
"Great, actually. Did you know that antifreeze used to have a sweet taste? They've changed it now so that it's bitter, but my killer had access to an old jug that was stored in a garage. She added a little to the victim's orange juice every morning until he got sick and died of natural causes. No one suspected a thing."
"Should I be worried about that quiche?" Jack laughed. "Is that really true about antifreeze?"
"It is. There was a woman they discovered was a black widow. She killed two husbands with antifreeze and then tried to frame her daughter for it."
"You must have some interesting search histories on your browser."
Kate laughed. "I know. It's funny, I went to a writer's conference with a friend a few years ago, and on the way to the airport, we were brainstorming the best way to kill someone for her story.
We got some looks from the other people in the shuttle van, until we told them we were writers." "You should write a mystery about a mystery writer who was also a murderer. They'd have the perfect cover. They could just say they were researching a book."
"Oh, that's true. That could be fun, actually." Jack seemed really interested in talking about her writing and shared that he was a bit of a mystery lover, too. "What do you like to read?" she asked.
"There's so many. Dennis Lehane is a favorite. My college roommate went to BC High with him, and he always got an A in English."
"That makes sense. I love his books, too. I actually lived in Charlestown, not far from where they filmed Mystic River."
"Did you like living there?"
"I did. It's so close to downtown Boston. I could walk to work or take the water shuttle across the harbor. I lived in the Navy Yard."
"By Old Ironsides?"
Jack mentioned the famous landmark. The USS Constitution was the world's oldest commissioned Navy vessel, built in the late 1700s and lovingly maintained. It usually sat in dry dock, but occasionally was sailed around Boston Harbor. "Yes, right down the street. I walked by it most days on my way to the water shuttle."
"That's very cool, taking a boat to work. Do you miss it?"
Kate took a sip of wine and considered the question. "Yes and no. I loved living and working in Boston, but I love it here too, and it's where my family is. I'd love to stay here if I could, but there's not a lot of demand for writers on Nantucket."
"There's a few famous writers that live here. Maybe you'll be one of them."
Jack's smile almost made her believe it was possible someday. I don't need to be famous, just make enough to support myself. I've picked up some freelance work, though, from the magazine I used to work for, so that's helping. Amanda had emailed another assignment the day before, a roundup article on Nantucket's top 10 restaurants. That would be a fun one to research. She told Jack about it as she took the quiche out of the oven and cut a big slice for each of them. She brought the plates and the bowl of salad to the island, and they dug in.
If you need any help researching those restaurants, you know, for quality control, I'd be happy to volunteer.
Kate laughed. I'll keep that in mind. She took a bite of the quiche and sighed. It had turned out as good as her mother's. Creamy, silky custard and big chunks of lobster. Fresh lobster had a sweetness that wasn't found in canned or frozen.
This is amazing. Best lobster I've ever had. Where did you get it?
He grinned as he took another big bite.
Seriously, though, the quiche is awesome. Thank you.
When he finished, Kate offered him a second piece, which he eagerly accepted. They chatted easily for another hour or so, over a little more wine. Kate learned that they shared quite a few common interests besides their love of mysteries. Jack also appreciated art and had bought one of Kristen's paintings at an art show a few years ago.
It's a small painting, but I saw it and had to have it. It's classic Nantucket, stormy seas crashing into a lighthouse.
Kristen loves painting the ocean. Where did you put it? Kate was curious to see the inside of his house.
In my home office. It has a nice ocean view, so seemed like an appropriate spot.
Kristen has an art show this weekend at the new gallery downtown, and I think she said it's all ocean-themed. You should go.
Maybe I will.
He grinned.
Want to go with me? We can check out one of the restaurants on your list before or after.
Kate didn't have any plans set in stone yet. She knew her mother would likely be going with either Rhett or Sue, and Abby had mentioned that Jeff was taking her out to dinner and they might stop by after.
Sure, why not?
Jack looked a little more serious as he asked,
Are you still dating Philippe? I don't want to step on any toes. He is a friend.
We went out once. He's a great guy. We just want different things. I recently ended an engagement. He cheated. She told him about walking in on Dylan and Ellie. Jack looked furious on her behalf and sympathetic.
Man, that's rough. Sissy never cheated, that I was aware of, but we just stayed together too long. We wanted different things, and it was easier to stay together than to break up. But she started pushing for a huge wedding, and we weren't even engaged. I think she just wanted to get married, not necessarily married to me, if that makes sense.
Kate nodded. It did make sense. Nantucket was a small island, and the pool of available men even smaller. Jack, with his family business and overall good looks, was considered a catch. He'd be a catch anywhere, though, and he deserved someone who was madly in love with him. They chatted a little while longer, but when Kate suddenly yawned, Jack jumped up and took it as his cue to leave.
Thanks so much for dinner. I'll call you on Saturday and we can make a plan.
That sounds good. Oh, take some of this with you. I can't eat all this quiche myself.
If you insist.
Kate packed up most of the leftover quiche, saving one big piece for herself, and handed it to Jack. See you on Saturday. Chapter 16. Kristen spent most of Wednesday afternoon carefully wrapping the paintings that Andrew had chosen for the show on Saturday. He had called earlier and said he'd be by around 4 to collect them. She was a little surprised and disappointed that she hadn't heard from him since the first time he'd stopped by and they'd gone for burgers. She'd enjoyed his company and thought that she'd sensed interest, but she'd also told Andrew about her breakup, and he'd told her he'd be happy to hang out whenever she was up for it. But she hadn't reached out either. It wasn't her way to call up a man she barely knew and invite him out, even as a friend. She hadn't thought much of it until this past week, as she had been busy and was still trying to get over Sean. He didn't make it easy, though. She had several missed messages from him, and finally a voice message asking her to please call, that it was important. Once all her paintings were safely wrapped and waiting in the living room for Andrew to arrive, Kristen called Sean. She had a half hour before Andrew was due to arrive, and she didn't imagine the call would take long. She just wanted to make sure she was done and ready before she let herself get distracted. Sean answered on the first ring.
Kristen?
Hi, Sean. You called? It sounded important.
Yeah, I appreciate the call back. I miss you. It's been a few weeks now. I'm just hoping that maybe you've missed me too. We can start over. It will be different this time. Better.
She liked what he was saying, but she knew him by now. Does this mean you filed for divorce? That's great news. There was a long, heavy silence.
Well, no, not exactly.
Not exactly? It's a simple yes or no question, Sean. Are you getting a divorce?
It's complicated. We're separated, almost as good as divorced.
It's a world of difference, Sean. I don't do complicated anymore. Complicated is messy. I like simple. Divorced is simple. Single is too. Simple is good.
If you could just be patient and trust me.
I'm all out of patience, Sean, and I have to go. Please don't call me again.
But Kristen,
bye, Sean. Kristen ended the call and walked into her kitchen. A few weeks ago, the conversation would have reduced her to a pile of tears. Now she felt sad, but there were no more tears for Sean. She made herself a cup of hot cinnamon tea and breathed in its heady, sweet spice. As she took her last sip, she heard footsteps outside the door and then a polite knock. Andrew had arrived. She opened the door and felt her spirits lift when she saw him. His smile was easy and big, reaching his eyes as he saw her.
It's almost the big day,
he said as he stepped inside.
Are you excited?
Yes, a little nervous too, she admitted.
Nothing to be nervous about. I'll be there and I expect we'll be packing them in. Daffodil weekend gets crazy.
It does. Are you going to the parade? There was a vintage car parade in the afternoon, and people planted their blankets along the side of the road to tailgate and watch the cars and people go by.
Probably not. I'll be in the gallery all afternoon and evening.
Of course.
What about you? Will you go?
Kristen shook her head. Probably not. That's not really my kind of thing. Too crowded.
How have you been? I thought about calling you a few times, but I didn't want to be a bother. I was hoping you might reach out to me if you wanted to hang out.
I'm good. I've just been working a lot, and it wouldn't be a bother if you called. He grinned.
Good to know.
They had an awkward moment of silence until Andrew nodded at the lined up paintings.
Are these all going?
Yes, they're all there and ready for you. She helped him carry the paintings out to the gallery van. Once they were all safely settled, Andrew turned to leave.
Do you have plans for Friday night?
He asked. Of course, it was the one night she did have plans. I do. I'm going to dinner with my sister and mother. We're going to the opening of the new restaurant near my mother's house.
Oh, that's opening this weekend. You'll have to let me know how it is. Maybe we'll grab a drink after the show on Saturday. If you're not too tired. I know it can be draining to be on. At least, that's what I've heard.
She laughed. I'm sure that never happens to you. I'd love to have a drink after. Lisa was counting the days until Gina's vacation was over. Every time she turned around, it seemed like she was running into the woman. As Rhett had predicted, Gina had yet to make it down for breakfast, but she'd chased Lisa down every day for something. Extra towels, bottled water, suggestions on who to call for a taxi or where to go for lunch or dinner. Fortunately, she did have friends staying downtown and had met up with them several times, so she wasn't looking to spend all her time with Rhett. Still, she liked to remind Lisa that they were married for over 10 years. Lisa was getting the mail on Thursday when a sleek, silver vintage Jaguar Roadster pulled up to the house. Seconds later, Gina came flying out the front door, screaming and waving.
"It's Delilah, my daughter!"
A tall, elegant young woman with her mother's long, wavy dark hair got out of the car and came over to them. Lisa knew that she was Rhett's stepdaughter, the one he'd said was going to be bringing his car to the island for Daffodil Weekend. Gina introduced them.
"Michelle, this is Lisa. She owns the house where Rhett and I have been staying."
She said it almost as if they were there together, which irritated Lisa.
"Nice to meet you, Michelle."
"You too."
Michelle turned to her mother.
"What time are we going out to dinner? I need to shower and change first."
"Not till around 7 or so. We're going to go to Rhett's restaurant. Tonight is their opening night, so he has to be there, but he'll be able to join us once the restaurant slows down a bit."
Michelle yawned.
"Cool, maybe I'll have time to lie down for a bit then."
"Go ahead and rest up, honey. We're in the room at the end of the hall, upstairs. I left the door ajar."
Michelle grabbed her overnight bag and went inside. Gina seemed to have more to say, so Lisa waited patiently and glanced at her mail. All bills, as usual.
"We're so excited to go and support Rhett's new restaurant. When are you going?"
"Tomorrow night."
Gina nodded.
"That makes sense. Tonight is the soft opening when they work out the bugs. It will mostly be family and friends.
Rhett said he wanted things to be close to perfect for us. We don't really care when we go. It's all good."
"Right, well, I'm off to visit with Michelle. Enjoy your day."
As Gina walked off, Lisa shook her head in amusement. Gina seemed determined to try to convince Lisa that she was Rhett's priority. And it didn't matter a bit which night they went to celebrate Rhett's opening. She understood that he wanted to have them wait a day so they could work the kinks out. The following morning, she was surprised to see Gina walk in for breakfast for the first time, along with Michelle. Rhett had just sat down with his first cup of coffee and smiled when he saw them.
"Michelle got you up, I see," he chuckled.
"Not by choice. She's not exactly quiet in the morning."
Gina poured herself a cup of coffee and joined them, sitting next to Rhett.
"You're just a grump in the morning," Michelle said with a smile as she put a bagel in the toaster and helped herself to a glass of orange juice.
"How did the opening go?"
Lisa asked. Gina answered before Rhett could say a word.
"It was fantastic. I knew it would be. Rhett has the magic touch. When it comes to restaurants, he always did."
"Thanks, Gina."
Rhett turned to Lisa.
"It went about as well as could be expected. There are always issues the first night, and we had a minor hiccup when the fry station power didn't want to work, so it looked like we weren't going to be able to do any fried food. But Henry James of James Electric got us up and running before it got busy."
"That's a relief."
Lisa knew that the fried seafood would be a popular and expected item on the menu. It was something people always wanted on Nantucket.
"So, if you have a craving for a fried fisherman's platter tonight, we can hook you up."
Rhett winked and she laughed.
"It's been a long time since I ordered one of those. What do you recommend?"
She looked at Gina and Michelle.
"What did you both have?"
"I had the shrimp and scallop scampi. It was good and lemony,"
Michelle said.
"I had a stuffed lobster."
Gina smiled at Rhett, who missed it entirely as he was glancing at the newspaper as he sipped his coffee.
"I knew it would be good, because this one at his New York restaurant is to die for. It's a seafood stuffing, scallops, shrimp, crab, and Ritz crackers."
Lisa smiled. the secret ingredient. Many of the restaurants on the Cape and Islands used the buttery cracker crumbs in their stuffing. Rhett looked up.
We do a lazy lobster casserole. That's nice if you don't want to do any work. The swordfish is my favorite, though. It's 1.5 inches thick, lightly dusted with crumbs and broiled in butter.
It all sounds good to me. Are you staying through the weekend? She asked Michelle, who was spreading peanut butter on her bagel. No, I'm heading back today, actually. I'm meeting friends in Boston for the weekend, then taking the train back to New York on Sunday. Jillian and I are going to try to come in again tonight. We'll sit at the bar. Gina smiled sweetly at Lisa, who had to fight the urge to kick her under the table. The bar is sleek, black and gray granite with black leather stools in a big semicircle. Gives it a cozy feel. Rhett chuckled.
I stole that idea from Keepers. Adjusted the design after we had dinner at the bar. Mine's about 4 times the size, though.
He looked at Gina.
If you want to sit at the bar, I'd advise you to come early. I won't be able to hold the seats there, and I have no idea what to expect tonight. I'm hoping we will be very busy. We have an encouraging amount of reservations already.
I'm not worried about it, Gina said blithely. Lisa was annoyed that the woman was going again 2 nights in a row. She didn't stay long at breakfast, though. She only had coffee, and as soon as Michelle was done with her bagel, she wanted to leave and dragged Gina with her. She's making me go shopping, Gina complained. Rhett laughed.
You poor thing. Have fun.
He waited until they were gone and then said,
I have plans for us tomorrow afternoon, if you can sneak away for a few hours.
Lisa was intrigued. I'm free. What are we doing?
We're going to be in a parade.
Chapter 17. The restaurant already looked busy when Lisa, Sue, Kate, and Kristen arrived Friday night around 6. The outside of the building looked very Nantucket, with its new blue-gray wood shingles, white trim, and flower boxes that were spilling over with wildflowers. Lisa smiled at the sight of Rhett's Jaguar parked on the grass out front, with a sign that said to come to the parade on Saturday. Rhett was by the hostess stand when they walked in and was looking over the reservations book. The restaurant was already 3/4 full, and there wasn't a single empty seat at the bar. To Lisa's dismay, Gina and her friend Jillian were already firmly ensconced in their seats. Rhett smiled when he saw them.
Jamie, my guests of honor are here. I'll show them to the captain's table.
He grabbed a stack of leather-bound menus.
I'm so glad you all could make it. Right this way.
Captain's table, how fancy.
Sue whispered as they followed Rhett to the table. It was a big round table that could comfortably seat up to 6 people, and it had a good view of the open kitchen. Rhett handed them all menus.
Sandy will be right over to tell you the specials and get your drinks order. I'll be back to visit in a bit.
They all settled into their seats, and a moment later, a cheerful young waitress with long red hair tied up in a ponytail, a face full of freckles and big blue eyes, came to the table and told them the specials and took their drinks order. They all chose different wines, except for Kristen, who ordered a vodka and soda with a splash of cranberry juice. When Sandy delivered their drinks, they put their orders in. Sue got the baked stuffed lobster, and Lisa and the girls all went with one of the specials, grilled swordfish. Lisa remembered that Rhett had said it was one of his favorites. A basket of freshly baked rolls arrived a moment later with butter that was whipped with something sweet, maybe honey. It was delicious, and Lisa reached for a second roll as Sandy returned to the table holding a platter of oysters Rockefeller. She set the steaming appetizer in the middle of the table.
Compliments of the chef and Rhett, she said. Your salads will be along in a few minutes.
Wasn't that nice of him?
Sue looked impressed as she reached for an oyster. Lisa agreed and did the same. It was a thoughtful gesture and appreciated by all of them. The oysters were cooked perfectly, tender and sweet, and topped with a mix of spinach, breadcrumbs, and a creamy, cheesy sauce laced with Pernod, which gave it a faintly licorice flavor. Lisa had mentioned during one of their evenings out that it was one of her favorite appetizers. She was touched that he remembered. Kate was already on her second one, and even Kristen, her picky eater, seemed to like them. "I didn't think I'd like oysters, Rockefeller, but these are really good," she said happily. "Are you excited for your show tomorrow night? Your mother and I are planning to stop in," Sue said.
"Oh, good. Thank you. I'm excited, but also a bit terrified. Because of the weekend, it's probably going to be busy and crowded and maybe a little intimidating." Lisa knew that Kristen sometimes felt overwhelmed around big groups of people. She was such an introvert, and Lisa knew that after an event like that, they probably wouldn't see or hear from her for a few days. It was almost like being around so many people drained her, and she had to go off and recharge. Lisa reached over and gave her hand a squeeze.
"You'll do great. Just remember, they're coming to see you, your work."
"But what if no one buys anything? I'll feel terrible for Andrew."
Lisa smiled. Kristen really didn't understand how talented she was.
"Andrew wouldn't have chosen you for such a busy weekend if he didn't think it would go well. He knows what he's doing."
"I suppose I'm just a little worried about the prices. They're much higher than usual for me. And the one piece he's auctioning off has a minimum bid that is a little shocking."
Lisa was intrigued.
"Really? That's exciting. I can't wait to see it. It must be really special."
Kristen relaxed a little. "You always know what to say."
"I do think that piece is my best work. It kind of poured out of me. I wish they were all like that."
"Kate, are you coming with us? We were thinking of heading over around 7, Lisa said.
"I'll see you there. Jack mentioned that he wanted to go, so we're going together."
He's a big fan of Kristen. He bought one of her smaller paintings a few years ago.
"Really? How nice."
Kristen looked happy to hear it, and Lisa thought it was interesting news that Jack and Kate were going together.
"How did the quiche turn out?" she asked.
Kate had told her how Jack had stopped by with a big bag of lobster. Maybe he was just being neighborly, but Lisa wondered if there could be some mutual interest there. Kate and Jack didn't socialize much in high school, and Kate moved off island right after college, but they were about the same age, and Jack came from a good family.
"It turned out great. Your recipe is perfect. I couldn't screw it up. Jack loved it. I sent him home with most of the leftovers."
"Good, I'm glad. How's his father doing?" Lisa knew about the heart attack and hoped he was doing better.
"Jack said he's good. He's been home for a few weeks now and is grouchy because no one will let him do anything. He can't go back to work for another month or so, and even then, he'll be limited to office work. Nothing physical."
A busboy cleared away their empty salad plates, and a few minutes later, Sandy brought out their entrees. Rhett stopped by to check on them, and they all assured him that everything was delicious. Sue's baked stuffed lobster looked decadent, and Lisa's swordfish was cooked perfectly. Nice and juicy, with steamed asparagus and fluffy whipped potatoes on the side.
"I was hoping to have more time to chat with you ladies, but we're busier than I anticipated, which is a very good thing. I'll stop back by in a bit."
Lisa watched him go and realized that she was seeing a different side of him. Rhett was a natural ex